Hey everyone, you made it to Friday and you already know Fridays rock. This is the first Friday in February, one of the coldest months in the year for many Americans, but it's also a month that celebrates love and appreciation. So we're sending you our love and appreciation. I'm Coy. This is CNN 10. Let's finish this week strong. We're going to begin today's episode by talking finance, specifically about interest rate hikes. An interest rate is what banks get paid by the people who borrow money from them. In the United States, the Federal Reserve System is the central banking system for the entire country. It was created on December 23, 1913, with the enactment of the Federal Reserve Act as a way to protect against future financial crises. When the Federal Reserve raises interest rates, it means people have to pay back a higher percentage of the money they borrow. Why would the Fed want to do that? Well, because of inflation. The thinking goes that if interest rates are higher and it's more expensive for people and businesses to borrow money, they'll spend less of it and inflation will settle back down. The cost of living in America has gone up significantly as prices of things we buy have risen. We'll hear now from CNN business reporter Matt Egan.
The Fed's war on inflation isn't over, but it is shifting. This 25 basis point rate increase from the Fed is the smallest since this fight against inflation began back in March. Now, the Fed is still trying to slow this economy down to knock inflation down, but it's gone from slamming the brakes on the economy to tapping the brakes. And that is an important shift because it lowers the risk that the Fed ends up causing an accident, either in financial markets or in the real economy or in both. Ed, the Fed is changing its tune on inflation a bit. The statement says that inflation remains elevated, but it also concedes that it has eased.
Okay. Did you know tsunamis can travel thousands of miles at speeds up to 500 miles per hour? A tsunami is a series of waves usually caused by an underwater event like an earthquake or a volcanic eruption, and they can cause serious damage to communities that are hit by them. More than 700 million people live in coastal areas that could be exposed to tsunamis. So imagine how powerful it would be if we could predict them. We're traveling to Tonga, a Polynesian country that's part of an archipelago of islands, to hear about the work of the folks at the Tonga Geological Society who are studying the ocean floor to get a better sense of what causes tsunamis.
Late December 2021, in the middle of the South Pacific, an underwater volcano is active once again. 2 weeks later, a series of eruptions will reverberate around the planet and be visible from space. Tsunami warnings were issued across the Pacific, and the next afternoon, a series of waves hit the island country of Tonga, some as high as 15 meters, killing three people and leaving mass destruction in their wake. When the dust had settled a few months later, a ship from New Zealand's National Institute of Water and Atmospheric Research, or NIWA, set sail to find out what had triggered the eruption. Marine geology technician Erica Spain was on board.
The voyage up to Hunga Apai to map the volcano was really exciting. It's a multidisciplinary voyage, so you've got multiple science streams working together to try and figure out what was going on and why it erupted so violently.
The multi-beams on either side.
Spain's mission was to map the seafloor around the volcano using a machine called a multi-beam echo sounder.
An acoustic pulse, so a ping or a sound, is emitted or sent out from the bottom of the ship, and then it echoes effectively off the seafloor. And then we have hydrophones or a listening ear that receives that echo, and from that we can determine how deep the seafloor is and build up an idea of its shape and geometry. Every volcano has a different trigger in terms of when it might erupt. And by mapping Hunga Tonga, Hunga Apai, and then comparing that to other volcanoes, we can begin to build up a better image of what these triggers might be or what they might look like on the seafloor.
Mapping, taking rock samples, and filming underwater all help build a bigger picture of what happened here.
So you have to become a seafloor detective to piece all those small parts together.
That detective work can help countries like Tonga better prepare for tsunamis.
10-second trivia. The vernal equinox marks the start of what season? Spring, summer, fall, or winter? Happening on March 20th this year, the vernal equinox marks the start of spring. Bye-bye, wintertime. Yesterday, February 2nd, was Groundhog Day. On this day, some people predict when winter will come to an end by watching a groundhog. In Pennsylvania, my home state, one of the most notorious groundhogs of all time, Punxsutawney Phil. Each year, in a tradition derived from a Pennsylvania Dutch superstition, people watch to see how the groundhog emerges from its burrow, and whether or not the furry creature sees its shadow, well, that will determine when winter will end and spring begins. February 2nd isn't just some random day. It falls at the midpoint between the winter solstice and the spring or vernal equinox, making it the ideal time to consider when springtime might finally come. We're going to meet up with one of our in-house experts now to break it all down and find out what Punxsutawney Phil had in store for us this time. All right, the forecast and the hat you've all been waiting for. We're here with friend of the show, CNN meteorologist Allison Chinchar, and here it is. Punxsutawney Phil officially predicts 6 more weeks of winter after seeing a shadow Thursday morning.
That's right. Now, the legend goes, if the groundhog sees his shadow, which he did this morning, we will have 6 more weeks of winter. But if there had not been a shadow, spring would actually arrive early. Now, scientifically speaking, winter will officially come to an end on the equinox on March 20th, regardless of what Phil predicts. But Mother Nature doesn't always follow the timetable, and neither does Phil.
All right, so what if we don't like his forecast?
Okay, so don't worry, because he's actually usually wrong. In the past, Phil has been way more likely to see his shadow than not. In fact, he's reportedly seen his shadow 105 times, but not seen his shadow only 20 times. Statistically speaking, Phil has only been correct in his forecast about 40% of the time in just the last 10 years.
That's not very good, Phil. All right. The interesting thing here is also that Phil's not the only forecasting groundhog. In fact, there are many others just like him. He has competitors in states like Georgia, New York, Illinois, Wisconsin, Ohio, and some states, they're not even groundhogs. They have nutrias, they have possums, they have ducks, and a lobster?
I'm not sure how you'd see that shadow. Not so much. Now, some of the more colorful names include Pierre C. Chadeau of Louisiana, General Beauregard Lee of Georgia, and Staten Island Chuck from New York, just to name a few. And ultimately, quite what this means is if you don't like Phil's forecast, chances are you'll like one of the other forecasters' forecasts just as well.
And for today's story, getting a 10 out of 10, scientists have invented a shape-shifting robot. Check this out. The robot was presented as part of the research on metal microparticles. And it's made from gallium, a metal with a low melting point. The robot is able to move via the use of magnets. Scientists hope that one of the areas this type of drippy droid could help would be surgeries, believe it or not, potentially making them more effective and safe. And their inspiration for all this? A sea cucumber. What in the world? All right, special shout out now to Sycamore Middle School in Sycamore, Illinois. We see you. It has been awesome learning with you this week. Let's finish this day off right and take boundless energy into the weekend. And remember, you are more powerful than you know. I'm Coy Wire, and it's been a blessing to spend this week with you.